Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Straight Talk Radio, where we discuss business, politics, and culture. I'm your host, Donya Keating, live from the Seattle area at about 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Is it? Okay, whatever. On Wednesday, December 30th. Listeners, dial 646-378-0261 to chime in live. Press 1 on your keypad when you're ready to speak. And if you'd rather send us a comment or a question via chat, you could open that up and go. And as we have said on several broadcasts, it might be a little bit wonky. Some people have had problems with it. So if you have a Blog Talk account, it might alleviate that. It might not. And I think there might be a feature where if you don't want to put your question out there on the chat openly, you can actually send one privately to Chris, who is kind of monitoring the board there. So anyway, I have to admit that although we got word that many of you were writing in and asking if we'd be doing a show about the elections, I was personally not looking forward to covering what I think is easily the biggest circus yet in the political arena. I mean, it's just a joke, and we'll get to some of that, but certainly not worth the time other than to maybe talk about some candidates, talk about some positions that are out there, speculate on and what we think is going to happen in some of the primary and getting to the general elections and just, some other things that may crop up. I think Charles Keating is expected to join us today, along with a few others who want to call in that said that they were going to call in. And this will be as long or short as that participation dictates. I don't care. If it was just up to me, it will probably be short and not so sweet. But anyway, let's get started. I'm going to hop on over to the studio and see who's out there. It looks like I have Charles. Charles, hi.
Hello. I am here.
So, yeah, you are. And I don't know. I mean, we never know who's out there. Sometimes we have repeat people that are listening, and then we sometimes have people that have never listened before. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself personally and or professionally and about your background and some bio information?
Well, I'm an IT consultant. I started programming when I was 16, so I've been in the tech field almost forever. And I am the current president of West Sound Technology Association, so I have contacts with lots of different businesses and helping promote technology. And I've always voted since I've been able to vote, since we're talking about politics. And I kind of come from that vein of small business Republicans, which seems to be very endangered species nowadays in the current climate where there's really and back in the day when there was bipartisanship, at least in my opinion. So that'll be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point about that. There's so much partisan toxicity and so much rhetoric out there, and there are some lines in the sand where people are afraid, especially here. We live in a part of Seattle that is known for being very progressive, quote unquote, and very left leaning or liberal. And there are some people that live here that are not, that are afraid to speak up and that feel like they have to silence themselves. Well, I'm not one of those people, and I'm not the least bit intimidated by anybody here. But I think the other thing for me is that you just have to choose your battles and value your time and know where you want to go to have discussions with people who really benefit from misunderstanding you and have no interest whatsoever in trying to find middle ground or any kind of commonalities towards solutions. They just want to shout each other down. And so my point being, when you say, I'm a Republican or a conservative, but you always have to qualify it because there are people that are always waiting on the sidelines to take a shot at that and characterize it in the most extreme way, and it's just ridiculous. So it's not worth it. And the other part of that is that our party, quote-unquote, because I've never really considered myself, beholden to a party, even though I
Correct.
Lean a certain way, has certainly been changed over the years and gone to the extreme right or, just really kind of gone off the map in terms of what it was originally supposed to represent. And so, talking today about some of the candidates and whether or not they're actually even going to hit that target in any way, left or right, is going to be interesting to explore. So let's jump right in, and I'm going to ask you a question here. And pardon my voice today, audience. I'm kind of still struggling with some kind of bug over the last few months. But what the hell happened, Charles? I mean, what happened? Why? How do we end up with this roster of ridiculousness for our presidential candidacies?
Well, in my opinion, I think it's the culmination of a winner-take-all mentality, one that seeks to try to curry favor with certain bases, so to speak, whether that's conservatives that are financial conservatives or religious conservatives or moderates. Although I think what's happened in recent times is there's fewer and fewer moderates because the rhetoric has become so toxic that anybody that tries to cooperate and find a middle ground is seen like, a Neville Chamberlain. You know, they're queasling. You know, they're sleeping with the enemy, so to speak. And I think that's completely the wrong perspective. I think this has got to play out. I think what's going to happen is it's going to play out until there is such a huge disaster where somebody is so partisan that, you know, the gridlock is getting worse and worse, and I think they're seeing that. You know, there's no way. I'm almost at the point where it's like, I don't care what label you attach to it. If somebody's extreme, I'm not for them, and I don't care what party they are. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, the label doesn't matter as much anymore. There should be almost a third party that's the moderate party that believes in working with both sides. And maybe that's what the third candidacy really is going to eventually have to be about, because the middle is disappearing.
You know, we always have these conversations, and by we, I mean society, about the, you know, how the third party is really needed because we've kind of gone past the point of no return with respect to where the two major parties are going. And you do have to wonder what it would take for someone to finally step up and have a candidate that is from a third party that has a reasonably good chance of being elected. And I, looking at the election and the candidates right now, frankly, I think it is a circus and I think it's ridiculous, but in many respects, I think it reflects reflects society. I mean, people are very, very divided. They're very, very toxic in the way that they engage one another. And so, you know, maybe the candidates are reflecting some of that, but I also think that we're driving it. And I think that when you get past the point where you start really listening to or having conversations about the issues and how we can resolve them, then you're certainly going to end up with the sound bites that we're ending up with and the promises that we're ending up with and all of the conversation that's taking place in a vacuum, as if we're so stupid to not realize that all of these promises cannot happen without the cooperation of so many different people and you know, Congress and so forth, and getting laws passed. You know, right now, we've just gotten back from, I'm sorry, I didn't want to keep going on, but we just got back from D.C. not that long ago and spoke with some people that we highly respect, some elected officials that we've worked with for many, many years, Derek Kilmer being one of them from Washington State, who, by the way, just showed up in the Washington Post as one of the most effective, and I think they had a list of four or five top effective representatives on the D side. And he said that this is really even worse than the do-nothing Congress that we had back during the times of Truman. So you had a comment you wanted to jump in with?
I was going to say, when you were talking, it is important not to mistake the symptom for the cause. I think what we're seeing is the candidates is not the cause of our problems, but reflective of the symptoms of what's going on in society. I think with, you know, drastically falling incomes in the middle class and the middle class separating into fewer in the middle and, you know, more higher-end income or very, very higher-end incomes that are not being, that are able to escape taxation. They're talking about it as like people at the highest income levels, and I say the ones that are making in the hundreds of millions of dollars, are able to avail themselves of tax strategies that even people in the quote-unquote upper middle class can't afford. So realistically, you know, Warren Buffett pays less of a tax rate than his secretary, and he knows this, and he admits it, and he's a billionaire. So he's like, this is kind of fundamentally wrong. There's nothing that says in a tax system that we should be trying to tax more of the lower and middle income than we are of the higher income in terms of a percentage tax rate. But, you know, maybe for lack of a better term, we've already essentially gotten to the flat tax in application. But long story short, that's the reflective of what's happening in society. Like Trump plays right into this very disturbed middle-income society. There's a lot of people that have not gotten jobs back after the fall-off in the economy. Those jobs that did come back are not nearly as well-paying. The ones that do open up are not available to older workers in many cases. There isn't sufficient retraining. There isn't sufficient opportunities. There's still a lot of discrimination and issues that are going on. And I think all these factors are playing into a very angry electorate that realizes, fundamentally, things are wrong. And the solution is not a simple one where we can continue to stay an average course and just keep doing what we're doing. I think ultimately we're not going to be able to keep doing what we're doing.
And I agree with you. I think there's a lot of anger that's out there. Some of it justified, some of it sort of just, I would say, exaggerated. But, I mean, the reality is that there are reasons for being angry or upset or impatient or whatever, because there's sort of a split society here. There are people that are working very hard for what they achieve, and they're making sacrifices to get there. And of course, it's not like we're looking for, you know, tax breaks everywhere or all types of loopholes or whatever, although that does happen at the higher echelons, as you've mentioned before. But, you know, the other side of that is that there are people that are really looking for their handouts. It's a struggle for them to get back on their feet. They're content to be on the dole. There's rampant consumerism and a lack of responsibility, and some of those things are actually reverberating back into our society, where they almost demand, and they feel entitled to being taken care of on a certain level. And I think that there's some kind of a middle ground between those two positions that has to take place. But the other thing is, you know, you talked about the anger and how people are feeling, but I think part of it is sometimes they're responsible for it because they're not informed or not as informed as they could be about the issues. I mean, I look at people, even on social media, under articles or media or whatever's out there when I have a chance, and there are people that I know and even respect that I consider reasonably intelligent and educated, and even they have succumbed to sound bites and very, you know, half-informed, you know, half-cocked types of posturing. So in a lot of ways, you kind of get the government you deserve, and if you're angry, then you have yourself to partially blame, because, you know, at some point you're going to have to cut through all the bull and get to the issues and make some decisions, and we're not going to agree on everything. It's just not going to happen that way. We're all different types of people in this society, but you have to find something so that you're not in gridlock, and I think that's part of the, you know, the problem that we're seeing here. And again, like I mentioned before, all of the promises about what people are going to do, we've seen all that. We've been through it many, many, many presidencies where everybody thinks they're going to walk in with a cape and save our society, and it just doesn't happen that way. Anyone that works with government or in government, which I've done and you've done, we know how it operates. We know that you have to cooperate. There has to be some quid pro quo in there and some deal making, and if not, then we just have stasis. So what are some of your thoughts? Let's talk about candidates.
Well,
let's go through a couple of those.
One thing I wanted to say on that is, which we did get from the trip to D.C., is that behind the scenes, when they get there, there's the rhetoric that is for public consumption. Then when they actually get down to the business of working in Washington, they do still realize that they have to work there. The laws haven't changed in what it takes to pass a bill. So as a result, they do realize that they have to get together. So despite the rhetoric, which has created a very toxic external public environment, internally in D.C., they still have to cut deals with each other. And so that's still happening. That was a good thing that came out of that trip, by the way, so I want to say.
Yeah, and the other part that came out of that is, you know, it's always been the case, but it's certainly more critical and more poignant now, and that is that they are overwhelmed as well. I mean, they are, in a lot of ways, operating in a vacuum. Their information is very internally processed and reprocessed. If it's not lobbyists, then it's special interest groups, and then it's themselves and all of these people and their information. So they really do like to hear from, contrary to what many people believe, they really do like to hear from citizens and business owners. They want to hear those calls from you. They want to see those letters. They want to see those visits. You may not have to go to D.C. to do it, but if you can go to their local offices or the regional offices or reach out, they really want to know what you think. And I think the other thing that stands out is that they're so busy that they're not, I mean, there's this illusion from the public that they're just sitting there with all of these bills coming across their desk, that they're completely articulate on every single aspect of every issue that rolls through their office. And they're not. I mean, not to criticize them or anything, but they are not. So you can go in and have a meeting with them and talk about something and throw an acronym at them and expect them to understand what you're talking about. And they may not even know the bill that you're speaking of, even though they may have co-sponsored it. So you can become very jaded by that reality, or you can just recognize, hey, this is an opportunity to once again, you know, educate them about it and why it's important to me and what I want them to do, and then just move forward. But it is very, very true that they're certainly not on top of these, you know, massive documents and books of laws that we would like them to be you know, informed about. So I was going to ask you, and I'm still going to ask you, your thoughts about some of the specific candidates and their campaign and their stance on the issues. We can start with the D's or the R's. It doesn't matter to me, but I just wanted you to give some thoughts on that.
Let's start with the thumb that sticks out the highest, and that would be Trump. T for Trump.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So, you know, interestingly enough, again, and he taps into, I think, a very dispirited and angry electorate, which honestly does need to have a voice. And it's not, I do not discount their concerns. Healthcare has become unaffordable. Even with, you know, ACA, it's very hard to, the system doesn't work well. And it's very hard to buy insurance, and even when you use it, you know, with a very, very high deductible, there's many cases where, you know, it's essentially you're paying $5,000-$10,000 a year to cover a family, and on top of that, you have a $10,000 deductible. So if anything happens, you're still, you know, on the hook for pretty much all of your costs. So it's very the electric right now has got an issue. And with Trump, gosh, he's playing to so many sound bites. You almost got to wonder, does he believe some of the things he's saying, or is he smart? You know, playing smart and basically using this as kind of free media, and then later on in the campaign he's going to say, yeah, I didn't really mean that. Now, I think presidentially you shouldn't do that. I mean, honestly, you can change your position on things. You could say, hey, I said this, but this is kind of what I really meant, or really I've rethought my position and really I think X. But Trump has painted himself into so many corners in such a assertive way. I was going to say, maybe I was going to use a different term, but, you know, essentially his personal attacks on other candidates, in my opinion, means that he's too busy trying to win and tear down everybody around him that I think he's disqualified himself, in my opinion. So as far as I'm concerned, he's irrelevant. Now, he's not irrelevant in the fact that he's leading the Republican field, so you can't ignore him, but I think most Republicans would be horrified if Trump won. And I think it would basically destroy the party or tear it in half. And maybe that's part of his goal. Maybe eventually he wants to see, you know, a different type of party out there that, you know, believes in, you know, kick out all the immigrants, even though we're a nation founded upon immigrants. I mean, there's all these things that he says that are so completely unconstitutional that, you know, he would never be able to do half the things he even says. Even if he was president, he would be reined in by the office. But neither here nor there, just the symbolic of voting somebody like him. This would be like voting Marie Le Pen, the president of France. So I don't think he would represent us well.
Well, the thing about Trump is, first of all, there are some comments. The first comment that came through on the chat is that he's a clown. Well, okay, no surprise there. But he's also a shrewd businessman, and I've worked with him in the past and have seen him evolve over time. But there have been comments out there in the blogosphere about Donald Trump being a shill and that he's really just trying to get Hillary elected. So for some people, that theory doesn't pass the sniff test. For some, it does. And the point behind that is that, you know, what he's doing is riling up a base, you know, a very far-right, angry base. And even though he's not really going to get the, you know, so we assume, not really going to get the nod from the party in the primaries, then what he would be able to do is turn to some other candidate and use that as leverage and say, okay, well, I can throw this base to you and I can throw these votes to you, and in return for that, I'm going to want X. Now, whether that's a candidate, you know, a cabinet position or some other type of influential position, who knows? But the other part of that is that if people are so afraid of the party, whether they're independents or moderates or even left-leaning, and they just find the idea of him so repulsive, then it drives people over to the D side. And so then you start looking at who are those candidates, and that's, you know, Bernie, and then it's also Hillary. And so with that relationship that he's had with the Clintons for so many years, that is very well documented, you know, they've hung out together, they've been to his wedding, you know, he's also been very for her vocally in the past. I mean, there is that, is he really just really trying to get her elected? And so now this is just theater, and they get together and say, okay, I'm going to call out Bill's, you know, Monica Lewinsky indiscretion. I'm going to, you know, criticize you on all these other things, but at the end of the day, you know, here's the you know, the game plan. So,
in other words, he might be spending, you know, $50 million or $100 million of his own money, but in the end, he'll make that back in tax breaks.
So easily,
so,
yeah, right.
You know, so to him, it doesn't matter. Now, one thing I will say that is kind of in his favor is he does have this ability, because he doesn't take money from anybody, he's just using his own, that he can give voice to certain issues that nobody would normally touch, okay? So, oh, I don't want to touch that because that would make people angry. Well, the fact is, everything's on the table because of him. So I do want to say there is that silver lining of the cloud with him, and that he's been able to give voice to issues that otherwise probably wouldn't have seen the light of day. Now,
well,
I haven't thought
like
about this whole undermining, like a whole, this whole conspiracy, let me completely undermine the Republican Party with this message and basically hijack them, and then it'll become so it might be a very smart strategy on his part. So, because quite frankly, it's working. And,
well, he's not an idiot, and you know, no matter what anybody has
no.
to say about him and how he's being a clown, obviously, in the political arena, he's not a stupid man by any stretch of the imagination. But I think the other point is when you talked about earlier people being so afraid of him and that he's never going to get anything passed, and I did say that earlier about being able to partner with people in Congress in order to get things done, and other special interests and influentials and so forth. The other side of that coin is that if you've got enough, if you're an elected official and you want to stay in office and you've got the majority of your constituent base contacting you and saying, I want these policies enacted, you know, there's some kind of pressure there that may come to bear on the elected officials to start representing those very policies that we find repugnant and these dreams that we find repugnant. So that's certainly a possibility. But
so for instance, you say that, and a perfect example is, think about immigration and how much he's harped upon, you know, how porous our borders are. Well, do you think that that's had any impact on the current administration, on Obama's administration, with this whole announcement of this campaign to round up a lot of the illegals that have started the cross coming into the new year? So, like, there's been a surge in immigration, and they're basically, maybe they're, I don't know what all the underlying trends are, but it looks like the administration is reacting to some of the things that are being sent out there.
Well, I mean, because ultimately this is a government by the people, and if the people, you know, sometimes, you know, and there's a comment that we often said in school with some of my professors, and it was one of those things where sometimes, you know, it's, you have to decide if you want to have an enlightened dictatorship or if you really want to have a pure Republican democracy, because the reality is that some people have desires and there's some things that they want, but they don't necessarily know what they need. And there's that balance point where you have to figure out as an elected official, you know, how far am I going to go to listen to the voice of the people and give them exactly what they want, especially if it's a majority request, even if that might be wrong. Where does the line get drawn? Where do you stand up and say, no, we're going too far? And as a representative, then I'm not just someone that's here to be a puppet, you know, and you're the puppeteer, but I'm also here to be a trusted advisor based upon my knowledge and understanding of the system and what I think we should be trying to achieve. So I don't know. But so other than, you know, we talked about, you know, Trump, and we can certainly spend this entire show on Trump, and I don't want to do that. But what are your thoughts about some other candidates that are out there?
Well, if I look at the entire Republican field, let's just take the Irish for a second. I think some of the things that Ben Carson, you know, when I looked at the reaction in the media and then I looked at what he said, he actually made a lot more sense than what the media portrayed. And yet, there's some things out there that basically in his past, like, you know, I wanted to kill somebody and different things that he said that were like, well, this is very interesting. I haven't looked at that enough to see whether or not he's somebody I would consider later on, but I think ultimately what disqualifies me for a lot of the Republicans is they have such an issue with trying to destroy what I think is one of Obama's better achievements, which is the Affordable Care Act. Now, I don't think it's been implemented well, and I think it needs to be improved radically, but ultimately, I know that, for instance, health insurance should not be tied to work anymore. Too many people are in contract labor or in independent positions, and the way insurance works is it only works efficiently or cost-effectively for large corporate employers. If you're an individual going at the healthcare market, you get the worst possible deal. And ultimately what we're saying is we're basically hobbling our innovation economy by not figuring out that we should have a healthcare system like a lot of our other advanced economies in the world have. They all have some kind of universal single-payer health system. They don't have this complicated, convoluted, expensive, inefficient healthcare system that we have. The problem is almost all the Republican candidates that I know of are attacking and wanting to preserve a system that doesn't work. And so ultimately, if I had to have a litmus test, it's like fundamentally you're not representing Republican interests if you're doing something that economically is destroying us. So the Republicans, in a lot of ways, are disqualifying themselves. But I think they're doing it because it sounds good, and that you have to pass the party litmus test to hate the ACA in order to even be a Republican candidate right now. And that's kind of a problem for me.
So your comments regarding
your
comments, but you're not running, okay? So you're not running.
Yeah.
Carson is. And so the question is, with Carson, your issue with him or your thoughts with him are X. You think that he's disqualifying himself because of the partisan positions that he's taking against ACA and other things, or
I don't think he's going to have the chops to be president. I think somebody like Christie would have a better chance of being a president, and I think Marco Rubio. But you know, they all have their flaws, and they have some pretty big ones. And they all have their skeletons in their closet. Now, I'm not saying anybody who walks into the national spotlight has to be perfect, free, and clear. But they have to offer, or really, in my mind, paint some realistic alternative of what they want to do. Now, maybe the problem is with this nasty political season where everything has been hyped to the max, the real messages are getting lost. Because I'm sure some of them have put out more intelligent policy positions, but those guys aren't being listened to at all. They're basically ignored. You're not good theater. It's not important. Nobody wants to talk policy when somebody's, you know, got a lampshade on their head. That's the person that's getting all the attention right now. So,
yeah, and I think the thing about, you know, Carson is that, you know, a lot of times, even people that I know well, they're out there on the internet and they go, oh my God, look at this news article. You know, he's such an idiot. How could he say that? And then you kind of do your own due diligence because why not? And no matter who you're for or against, why not? Why not be informed is my position on that. So, and then you go and you search and you see what he really said. And then you want to say to people, look, we kind of have to grow up a little bit here. We're never going to have a perfect candidate. We never have had a perfect candidate. So we really should stop looking for perfect candidates. But we really do have to have a better idea about what a good candidate looks like. And I think that sometimes we look for, you know, that whole savior complex where we think somebody's going to come in, they say the right things, and they're going to wave their magic wand, and they're going to, and that's just not going to happen. But regarding Ben Carson, whom I've met also and talked to, and you know that, but I think he's a very well-spoken man. I think he's a bright man. I think he's had a lot of accomplishments in his life. But I agree with you that I don't think that he is ready for prime time in terms of presidency. Will he possibly be able to come back and
maybe
once he's gotten himself a little polished up and more politically savvy, maybe he can be a contender in the future? Who knows? But I think that right now he's not ready. And so in terms of Mark Rubio, I mean, so the comment, there are a couple of comments that have come through on the chat, so I'm going to throw them in there and I'm going to use them to jump into the next comment. Well, somebody said Carson is not presidential material. And then the second comment was that the feeling is that people that have actually been governor before have a better understanding and ability to lead in the presidential seat than someone who's been in the Senate, because it's a totally different environment where you have to cut deals and so forth. And yet running a state is very similar to extrapolated out running a country. So, you know, your comments on that plus your thoughts about Mark Rubio.
Well, first off, I do agree with that. I think it's a better proxy. If you are a governor of a state, you're an executive, you're dealing with a legislature, it's going to be a very similar experience, just at a smaller scale than running the presidency. So those people that have – now, that being said, there's a lot of people that are elected governors who have never been governors before. So, and the same thing is true. You know, there's people elected president who haven't been president before, so it's a new position. It's a question of how do you think that person is going to be able to, based upon what they're saying, I think for me, I always kind of start with their policies, but then I also look at the person and see what I think. And, of course, I will admit, I have not looked at these candidates enough to really, like maybe when it gets down to the top couple in each field, like the primary is really coming along the line, and now I'll actually look at them a little bit more closely. Right now, it's like a whole bunch of posturing, and, you know, there might be a candidate that you think is awesome on paper, you know, or that starts out really you think is kind of cool, but they don't even make it to the primary. So it's kind of like, well, there's no point really investing ourselves this early into the game. So
well,
as it gets later in the game.
Wait, because the counter point to that is that if you invest the time in understanding who they are, then maybe the person that is the best is someone that you can cast a vote for, and they do get past the primary. So, I mean, that's a chicken
and egg
comment.
We're not at the point of voting. You're right.
I understand.
We're not at the point of voting, but they are kind of in the beauty contest stage right now, and they're passing through the debates. And, yes, by the time it gets to Iowa, I'm just realizing that in my own personal opinion, unless somebody happens to listen to this show, hear my comments, and throw their support for some particular candidate, I realize that I have very little influence over this process. But for myself, if Ben Carson happened to get through all of the rings, he is somebody who has accomplished a lot, and I think actually looking at some of his positions and the way they've been portrayed in the media, I'll take, for example, the a Muslim shouldn't be president. Well, of course a Muslim can be president, but he was talking about Muslims who hold certain beliefs that are contrary to the Constitution. And he said if there was a Muslim that held all those beliefs that were in alignment with our Constitution, well, then of course I would vote for him. And that was exactly the correct answer. It's not about the religion. It's about the beliefs and what do they what they support. And so that was an interesting comment. And in that respect, I respect actually what he said. So Ben wouldn't be a horrible guy. I like Marco Rubio in a certain way, but he also reminds me of, like, Obama, and that being a senator with, like, first-term senator maybe doesn't have the experience. But in a lot of ways, I think he represents the younger generation. Jeb? Jeb is, he's the old-school candidate for sure in this case. And
right.
We've had two Bushes, and I think people are going to have a hard time voting for a third Bush just because he's carrying on the legacy. Now, obviously, he's different than his brother and his dad, so they're not the same person. But the point is, I think people – Jeb hasn't lit anybody on fire. And he's got his pulse on everything. I think he just thought, based upon his credentials, based upon what he's done, again, as a governor, that he would be – well-positioned to be able to take on the presidency. But I think given the current environment, he's not standing out at all. So I don't think Jeb is really going to cut it.
Yeah, interesting. Earlier you made a comment about Chris Christie and how he had, he seemed like a viable candidate. And in some ways, Christie's kind of a, another New Jersey / New York type personality, similar to Trump, in that he crosses the line and he tells people to shut up, or he's just one of those guys that people he has appeal to a lot of people, and I like him. I mean, in some ways, because I think that sometimes the process that we're involved in just gets a little bit too murky, and people don't really say what they mean and they don't really say what they think, and there's a lot of gaming going on behind the scenes. And so it's a refreshing change to have somebody where you just know where they stand. Now, the other flip side of that, of course, because there always is one, is that you don't want to have somebody like Chris in office, trying to have a diplomatic conversation with, the president of Russia. I mean, there are certain things that you have to, and I'm not saying that he may not be able to switch gears to be able to handle that, but from what we've seen so far, I mean, he attracts a lot of heat. And Rubio, speaking of heat, he took some heat from Chris Christie. They're kind of cannibalizing one another, and from Bush. About his absenteeism, in his voting record. Over the last 3 years, he missed, national security hearings and missed more total votes than any other senator. And yet, here he is running for, the highest office in the land. And that's just kind of a – and yet, Trey Gowdy, who's been a bit of a right-wing sweetheart, endorsed him. So it's kind of interesting to see how this is playing out in terms of, who the sweethearts are. And then, of course, there's Rick Santorum, who – we also met Rick from years ago when we were kind of taking him to task for some of the stuff he was doing right around the time that, that Clinton was in office and that whole Monica Lewinsky stuff. So what do you think about him being in the race?
I think he's interesting, but I think he's kind of a very marginal, he appeals to a very marginal section of the electorate. I think there's only going to be three or four or five that even rise to the national stage and are still competing in a leader. So whatever I think about Santorum, I like him on some issues. I don't like him on others. I think sometimes he's my ideal candidate is somebody who's conservative fiscally but more progressive or liberal socially, that doesn't try to get into everybody's bedrooms and dictate everybody's behavior, but does try to be prudent in how they're spending our money and tries to be smart and maybe engages on certain things at a very deep level. And of course, you know, good moral values. I think Santorum's got good moral values. I think he gets a little bit preachy for me sometimes in
right.
trying to promote policies. And that's probably where I get a little bit uncomfortable with him. I don't know as much about him in terms of how he would, quote-unquote, handle the purse strings. I don't think he's a bad candidate. I think he would be certainly a good candidate, a strong candidate. But, again, he's the kind of person I don't think will even make it to the later stages with the current environment. So it's kind of like one of those things where if I invested all my hopes and dreams in Rick Santorum, he wouldn't even be there standing at the end. So it's one of those things where I just don't think he's got the base behind him, and he's not inspired enough people to even get to that next stage.
You know, and you mentioned earlier also that you talked about the Jeb Bush thing and how he's part of that whole dynasty. And, you know, the Bush dynasty, you know, the Clinton dynasty, you know, people are tired of seeing the same people like the Kennedys or whatever coming through the
yep.
door. There's pluses and minuses to that. You know, the plus is that you've got somebody that's in office that knows what he's doing, that has multiple reelections, that has some savvy that is used to dealing with, you know, the national and sometimes
international
stage,
yeah.
you know, that isn't going to, quote unquote, embarrass us. You know, and it's not like you're always having to look for flash. People say, oh, he's not, you know, flashy. He's dead. And it's like, well, sometimes that's what you need. I mean, you keep going for flash and there's no substance behind it. So there's that one, you know, thing to consider. And then the other thing is, you know, well, people are still looking at Clinton, and she's one of the highest polling, you know, under Bernie, next to Bernie. So, I mean, obviously she's still in the game and the Clintons are still in the game. So, you know, why not the Bushes if you're going to have it that way?
Okay,
but I think you're right. But
segue.
I think you're right in the sense that, you know, he may not he may be a sleeper candidate. But for a lot of people, I think that they're just tired of the legacy stuff. And he may not make the cut. So and then there's what? Let's say Mike Huckabee. What do you think about Mike Huckabee?
Again, a decent candidate. I think he's got the chops to do it. But, again, he gets a little bit more preachy on the social side. You know, I think he would get into trouble, and I don't think he would be very effective. So, as a result, I think the ideal candidate is probably, all things considered, probably somebody younger who has the ability to adapt and pivot than somebody who represents the old conservative establishment. I think the problem is right now the old conservative establishment has kind of tied itself into knots, and I don't think it's going to be able to stand up enough voters to really and not even enough voters, but it has to have this ability to reach across the aisle to embrace new ideas, because I think change in society is accelerating, and as a result, sometimes we have to be willing to change along with it. And we're not – that's the thing that I think I also look at with candidates is, what do you think is their ability to embrace change? You know, are they trying to, you know, reenact the glory days of the 1940s or the 1800s or something? Or are they really looking forward to, you know, 21st century policies? And what are we going to do in this information hyper data aware society with great robotics and automation? I mean, this is my whole job. Is about changing things so quickly, and yet I see people trying to, you know, promote policies like, well, let's close the doors on the border. Well, really, you're backwards. We want to welcome more people, not necessarily people to work in the farms. Sure, we need some of those, but why don't we welcome more high-tech workers, people with education? You know, why doesn't anybody who goes through a PhD program get an automatic green card to stay here? I mean, there should be things like that, or at least considered. You know, we should be trying to We do a pretty good job, but we could do a heck of a lot better job of attracting an even greater percentage of high-tech, high-skilled people into our economy. And I think the immigration equation misses that. So back to the people.
Because you're on your soapbox about the policies, and I get that. So,
yeah.
But the question is really about, you know, the elections
and who they are.
So let's just,
if I look at the people, I think that somebody probably Rubio, even though he's inexperienced, represents the younger generation and might have a better chance. Carson, to me, represents more of an outsider. He might have a chance just because he's an outsider. The other candidates, Christie, I think he likes breaking eggs. I like that about him. I think sometimes he breaks too many eggs and he causes himself a lot of trouble and a lot of enemies. Ultimately, I think at the national political stage, when you're trying to make deals, I would worry less about him getting along with the president of Russia than with the Democrats.
the Democrats would be more diplomatic, whereas, you know, the president of Russia might knock his head off at a meeting. You know, anyway.
I think they're alike in some ways, and as a result, I think they would probably check each other better than a lot of other candidates.
They would just bump chests, and then we would have World War III.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I think that you've made a couple of comments about social, quote-unquote, stuff, and I think what you're really talking about is religion. And I think that it's a hot-button issue for a lot of people on both sides. One side is the freedom of religion, where you really want to allow everybody to have the right to practice their religion or not practice their religion, as the case may be. And then on the other hand are people that don't want to hear anything religious, because this is not supposed to be, you know, a country that's based upon that, and yet you've got so many candidates and so many people that are quote unquote religious that lead with their religion, who have policies that they support based upon their religion about what they think other people should be doing, and I think that, like you, I tend to back away from that. There's a fine line between allowing people to have their religion and drawing a line and saying, hey, I don't believe what you believe. I don't believe in what you believe in. And therefore, I don't believe that your policy should be at my front door. So how do you decide on candidates based upon how strong they are in that whole religious arena? Yes, I agree with you that I would be more likely to back away from a candidate on that basis, because I don't like it. The founding fathers were smart.
Separation of church and state. Why? Because back when the country was founded, the people that were coming to our country were trying to escape religious persecution. We shouldn't be trying to recreate religious persecution and litmus tests of how Christian or Muslim or anything else you are. In fact, you know, the more you keep religion out of the role and running of government, the better off you are. Now, with relation to security threats, if people hold beliefs that represent security threats, that's a different matter, okay? It's a different matter. So I'll just leave it at that.
So one of the other comments that came in, other than the religious thing, was, and it was a very, you know, granular comment, basically said, no more old people. So, yeah, goes back to some of this, and that's ageist, and so I'm not going to touch that. But I think that there's something to be said for, like you said earlier, this is the 21st century. You want continuity and leadership on some level. You can't just keep busting up the system for the sake. Disruption for its own sake can become very counterproductive. But you do want some people that are going to go in the office that are going to be able to stay long enough to make an impact. And, you know, there's no guarantee. I mean, somebody that's young could drop dead tomorrow, where somebody that's older could be in there, you know, and never get out unless they're voted out after their two terms. But you know, so that was one of the comments. But just speaking about some of the other candidates, I saw something on CNN yesterday that one person showed up for O'Malley's event in Iowa. And for those who don't know who that is, we're talking about former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. He's running on the D ticket. So that's kind of a statement about, you know, knocking somebody out of the box if they're not getting it done. And then former New York Governor George Pataki dropped out of the Republican race. I think it was yesterday. So he's out. And then there's Clinton. Okay, so some of her allies are willing to acknowledge that she could lose New Hampshire to Bernie Sanders, who's currently leading in the polls. What are your thoughts about Clinton, and then what are your comments or thoughts about Feel the Burn, is what they're calling him?
Well, Hillary represents an interesting case. I think she represents, I think, greater than almost any other candidate, the representation of legacy here. On the other hand, she probably represents somebody who's probably going to be more effective at the levers of government because of her being that close to the, you know, being you know, Secretary of State. She has the connections on foreign, you know, international affairs. She's seen the workings of government very closely. So I think she has the skills. Obviously, she has the support. She's the Democratic front runner. I think she might end up being the safe choice for a lot of people in the end if she ends up being the on the ticket, if she ends up leading the ticket. So for a lot of people that say, you know what, I don't like where we're going, we're not sure, Clinton might end up being the safe bet, okay?
The and safe bet. I'm sure she wants that. I'm your safe bet.
Well,
here, there's your
yeah,
campaign
maybe.
Slogan.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And people may hate her, but I think ultimately we'd actually prospered pretty well under Bill Clinton as a country.
Well, this is
we
not Bill running, though.
I know it's not Bill running. I'm just saying is, but I think Hillary, it depends. I don't know enough about the fine-grained detail of her policy proposals. I mean, it's been so much about it's Hillary and going after her personality as opposed to going after her policies.
Well, no,
I don't know what
that,
all her policies.
I don't think Benghazi is about her personality. That's just me. But okay.
Okay.
But yes,
well,
yes. But yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
There are some things that are based upon her personality and how, you know, deceptive she is, and this whole email situation. And you know, she's a player. She's a political animal. She's an operative. I mean, let's not, you know, be under any illusions about that. So she is someone that is. That it is what it is.
Speaking about the person, one person we skipped on the Republican side who probably still has the potential to be a contender would be Carly. Maureen.
Well, actually, I was
going
to get to her, and I was going to talk about Ted Cruz, and then I was going to talk about Rand Paul on the libertarian type side. So, yeah.
Yeah, when we talk about like Carly or Hillary, I think they represent different, you know, powerful female voices in politics. And that may touch a chord with some people as well. You know, we've broken barriers, right? You know, we've gone from the white male running the country to, oh my God, we elected a person of color. Okay, well now it's going to be a woman, right? And next it's going to be, you know, somebody of Chinese descent. You know, whatever the next barrier is, I can see that being part of one of the things that happens. Now, is that the litmus test that I want to use for deciding who gets to be president? Absolutely not. But will some people do that? Probably will. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I, you know, what do you think about Carly in terms of her campaigning and her issues and her comments?
I think the thing that hurts her more than most things is not even her campaigning and her comments. I think she's, when I've heard her speaking, she's sounded sensible. But I think her record in terms of running a business has not been as successful as people would like. So her backstory is not as compelling as we would like. And I think if she rose to the top of the ticket nationally, that would become more and more an issue that would weigh her down. So I just don't see her flying to the top of the ticket. I just don't. She might be a VP. That's possible. That could happen. But that's a whole different animal. Maybe that's part of her underlying strategy. But back
well,
to
I guess
Hillary.
We're done with Hillary. We're moving on because
we're
running out of time,
Hillary,
and we haven't even gotten to the other questions here. You wanted to give some. I wanted to get some comments from you about Bernie Sanders and then Rand Paul, and then I'm going to go. And then I think we didn't talk about Ted Cruz, so I want to talk about him very quickly because we're kind of really running out of time here. And then I want to go back to Carly, and I want to make a comment about something you said about her.
Okay, secretly, I really like Bernie. I think he actually says some things that actually make common sense. The problem I was secretly, maybe not so secretly. Now
not
I said
anymore.
It publicly. I think Bernie actually says a lot of great things, okay? And I think that's the thing is, though, I don't know how we would pay for it. I don't know how we would get there. I don't know how much opposition we'd have. I mean, it's kind of like one of our smartest presidents was Jimmy Carter, right? He was a brilliant man, and he had a huge heart. But theoretically, is that all you need to run the presidency? Absolutely not. Somehow you got to have the chops to, you know, maneuver the other parties to work to your liking. And that's the thing I would have with Bernie is not so much his ideas or his policies. Some of them make a heck of a lot of sense. Now, when you add them all up, is it going to be so damn expensive that we bankrupt ourselves? Well, I don't think he actually envisions everything he wants happening. I think he's basically saying is, gee, would this be nice? This is really the way we should do it. And getting from here to there is not a zero-sum game, and it is not a one thing changes and everything stays the same. So we know that this is an adaptive, dynamic system. So I don't look at everything that Bernie says and says, oh, my God, if we elect him, all these things are going to happen, because we know that's complete malarkey. But on the bigger picture, would he represent some good policies? Absolutely. Probably.
Such as? What's it? Give me an example.
I think, like, his approaches on health care make a heck of a lot more sense, for instance. When you listen to him, he tends to represent, like, for instance, Citizens United, in the way that there's just so much money in politics that is corrupting the system. He's right. It's true. Absolutely is distorting the system. Now, can we overturn it overnight? No, not going to happen. But he's right on these issues, and he's speaking to the he's making some good statements that make a lot of sense. So do you hear some policies that you think about that are coming out of him that are completely wrong?
Are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to say about Bernie. All I will say about Bernie is that he has the luxury of making his comments because he doesn't necessarily, like any other candidate, he doesn't have to pay for them, and like every other candidate, he doesn't have to. He can always blame Congress or whomever else when they don't go through, because a lot of them will not go through because there is a large segment of the population that will not allow the government to become England or the UK, where you have more than half, 70% of the people on the dole. It's just not feasible. There's a certain mentality that's out there about helping people. I think it's compassionate, and I think it's reasonable up to a point. But I don't think this government should, you know, expand and take care of everything attitude is something that resonates with me. So that's all I'm going to say about Bernie. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have some good policies or some good ideas that I agree with, but I would say that he would not be the candidate for me. So, and just quickly before I forget about what I was going to say about Carly, is that you mentioned the fact that she wasn't successful. I'm assuming you're talking about HP and some of the stories that have circulated about that, which have actually been contested, and people have put some meat on that bone. But I would also say that, you know, sometimes it is an advantage to be able to have something that has failed, and then you actually learn from that and grow from that. And there are several candidates that we have had in the past, if not now, that have had unsuccessful ventures that have learned from them. But you can't discount the fact that she was actually able to climb the corporate ladder and pierce the glass ceiling and come to the level of success and achieve that she has achieved. So, you know, you can look at
absolutely.
It different. You can look at it from different types of perspectives, like, oh, okay, she didn't do so well at HP, but my God, she did succeed and get to that point. So where do we go from here? And is she going to be accurate about some of the things that she's saying through the debate, or is she going to have talking points that are kind of misstated, like every other person that's been standing on that stage, whether at D and R, they kind of wax philosophical about things that are not necessarily accurate. And, you know, it's up to us as citizens to look at the facts and try to find, through all of these candidates that we have up there who are absolutely imperfect, which one's going to have the better chance of getting things done, the better chance of working across the aisle because it's absolutely necessary, and who is going to have sound policies that are going to benefit the most people without turning us into a behemoth government that's got its hands in everything with this, you know, massively running away deficits. Speaking of, not that I think that's what Rand Paul's going to do, but we haven't talked about the two of them, and they're the only two that oh, wait a minute, somebody just called Bernie a socialist. Well, whatever. Okay, so Rand Paul...
Pretty much.
That's enough for me to say no. But Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, what do you think about those two?
Ted Cruz is too off the ranch for my liking. Yeah,
U.S. Senator. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's too far off the ranch for my liking.
What does that mean?
Too extreme on a lot of issues.
Such as?
He's like a hyper conservative, and I think he would really. I don't think he would be successful. I don't think he's got a chance. Not if he's at the top of the ticket.
I just wanted to hear you say it.
He might be.
Rand Paul. What about Rand Paul? Sorry to cut you off. Stop cutting him off. But it's 6 minutes left, Joe. Whatever.
No. I like Rand, but I don't know enough about him. I like him in that he's. I tend to ascribe to more of a libertarian type of, you know. But there's obviously flaws in that whole thinking as well, right? There's some things that you can be libertarian about as long as it's not on everybody else's dime. Right?
Well, it's like anything, but the point is that libertarianism is about getting government out of, you know, trying to going back to, you know, a free market society, for lack of a better description. I mean, so what is it about Rand Paul that you just think he's too much of an outlier, that he's, you know, outlier, that he's just not going to? Okay.
If I had to say it, libertarians make a mistake, and the mistake is this: they think they need to have the government out of everything. Well, guess what?
That's
you
not
can't
true.
Have the government. Well, I think some of them feel like, you know, oh my God, the government's just way too obtrusive. Realistically, the problem has not been regulation. The problem has been in trying to regulate appropriately. A free market economy doesn't work when there isn't when people can take advantage of one another. Just like you have to have ability to control monopolies, you have to have regulation for a free market economy to work. And I think too many libertarians think that libertarianism is getting government out of our lives, and in their impression that means no regulation. And in my opinion, that gets to be wrong. And I'll give you some examples.
I don't want any
examples,
because we're not here to talk about what you think about libertarianism.
Okay.
We're here to talk about what you think about Rand Paul. And so if you think that Rand...
I think he's interesting, but I don't think he's going to rise up. I don't think he's going to rise up.
Okay. So here we are, and we've got about 4 minutes left. And so, you know, I'm not going to get into the Rand Paul thing, because libertarianism... It's more complex than that, and yes, I
you
see
tell me
the
what you
pluses
think.
And minuses.
What do you think?
Well, I'm not, because I can't, because I've got 4 minutes left, and I got another question, and then I got to do my outro. So anyway, because I mean, there's a fine line between talking about the election and who you think is going to get in, and then going off and talking about the different policies and things that you believe in, you as in us, not just you as in you. And then that's where the time gets burnt, because we're not running for office, and I would never run for office, so I don't want to get into that. But... So the question is, what's the ticket going to look like on the DNR side, and who's going to be our next POTUS and VPOTUS, in your belief?
I think on the D side, Hillary will be the candidate. I think Bernie's going to have a lot of influence on the process and may have a lot of influence on who ends up being the VP. I don't think it'll be Bernie. I think it'll be somebody that we don't know. But I think it'll be Hillary.
So you don't think that even if Hillary won, you don't think that she would make Bernie her VPOTUS?
I don't think so. I think because, it's possible, but I think it's unlikely. I think
it would probably want to
do something different.
If Bernie won for POTUS, who do you think he would make for his VPOTUS?
Oh, God, I have no idea. But that would be an interesting choice. Literally, sometimes when somebody rises to the top of the ticket, the real final qualifying choices in making a decision is kind of like, who do you make as your vice presidential candidate? Because that is the second person that's a heartbeat away from the seat of power. And so that is a good proxy of your decision-making ability. And so,
okay, but this is not an editorializing comment. This is a straightforward.
Yeah.
Who do you think? I mean, because we're really down to the minutes here. You got to make these short and sweet.
Okay.
So on the R side, if in fact, you know, who do you think is going to be on the ticket for the R side?
I don't know yet. I really don't know. I don't think it's going to be Trump, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Oh my goodness, really? Huh.
I think it would be a tragedy if he is at the top of the ticket, but I wouldn't rule it out.
And if he was, then it would be maybe Carly or something like that. Because I'm down here. I'm down.
Could be.
Okay.
We'll probably know more in about 3 months. Would be my guess. I don't think it's going to be decided until March, April, until that time frame, is to see who's really going to be there.
Okay. So couldn't give you guys any information on that. And just want to thank Charles and all of you who called in or sent chat comments and questions today. This is our last live broadcast of 2015. You can find our podcast right here, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn. And you can follow us on Facebook at /STR8Radio. That's Sammy Tommy Roger, the number 8, Talk Radio. So got to sign off here. It's 2:59 p.m. Pacific Time on Wednesday, December 30th, and wishing you guys a happy new year. We'll see you in 2016. I guess that's it. We're out of here.